is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we go to that particular surface called Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Decisions made about the NASA budget, about House bills in the NASA budget, and other aspects of the regulatory environment, the FCC. Bob Zimmerman is here, keeps the website Behind the Black. This is about funding and regulation. Bob, we begin with the Biden administration's ambitions for NASA. They're changing the budget numbers. To what direction? Good evening to you.
Congress and presidents routinely now for more than two decades have routinely increased NASA's budget regularly. Just to give some perspective, back during the Bush Jr. administration around the year 2000, NASA's budget was about $16 billion a year. It is now about $27 billion, and that's what the Biden administration is proposing with the budget increases for NASA. Biden administration released its a summary of its budget proposal for 24 for the whole federal government, which included lots of taxes and lots of increases, but with NASA included increases. And in a two-page summary for NASA, it included several things such as a $500 million increase in the budget for the Artemis program, bringing it to a total of $8 billion a year, a commitment to partner with Europe's ExoMars Franklin rover mission, essentially replacing Russia in some manner or another, either provide the landing capability for this rover, which would make sense, and the launch capability, and then committing almost $1 billion to the Mars sample return mission partnered with Europe to bring back Perseverance core samples. That mission hasn't yet been designed. It's only been conceptualized as a helicopter mission, but this is big money now to do that. And then another $180 million to develop what they call what they're calling a space tug that can deorbit ISS. And be useful as this budget announcement says for other space transportation missions. This space tug would be larger than the space tugs that private companies right now are building. Those are for small sats generally. This would be a much bigger vehicle, similar in concept to the Progress freighter and to Northrop Grumman's Cygnus capsule. In fact, I would say Cygnus would be the number one candidate for winning a contract here. And the idea is to get something that can dock with ISS and either raise or lower its orbit, replacing the Progress freighters that do this right now. This is because the situation with the Russians remains tentative, even though the partnership seems strong at ISS. It's still tentative. And then another a little over a billion and a third for new space technologies. That's in the budget for an increase of $190 million. The space tug and this new technologies money will likely go to a lot of new commercial startups. I expect there might be some resistance from Congress, from the Republicans, for most of Biden's budget increases. But historically, Congress of both parties has been eager, as I noticed at the start here, to give NASA more money. So I'd expect these budget increases to be approved.
House Subcommittee, Bob, this is the FCC, which is a major concern regulation for my favorite toy, Starlink. What is happening?
Well, to give some background quickly, the FCC under the Biden administration has basically decided it makes the law, and it's been trying to expand its regulatory powers over satellite construction outside of its legal authority. It doesn't have statutory authority to do things like tell satellite builders how long their satellites can function and how they must be deorbited. It really doesn't have that authority. It's supposed to just simply be assigning communications frequencies and making sure satellite constellations don't conflict with each other. But they've been trying to do that. Well, a set of bills was passed, five bills dealing with the FCC by the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee this week. The first bill was the big one. It basically outlines the regulations for the FCC directly addressing its regulatory power grab. And not surprisingly, Congress more or less agreed with all the FCC's power grabs. They're just simply now putting a legal stamp of approval on it. They are putting a little bit of restrictions on it. They want the FCC to, if it's going to regulate or restrict action, they've got to move quickly. They can't hold up private companies. And the law does also state that the FCC cannot establish, quote, performance objectives, satellite objectives, spacecraft objectives, space station objectives that conflict with any standard practice adopted by the Secretary of Commerce. In other words, the FCC has to allow the other regulatory agencies that are supposed to be regulating commercial space to have first dibs. And so that will hold them back a little bit, but essentially the FCC is now more powerful. This bill, however, is not approved, but it has to be approved by the full committee. It has to be approved by the full House. It has to be approved by the Senate. And then it has to be signed by the president. So it's a long way before the FCC is made legal, at least.
We're leaving Washington, D.C. We're not smarter, but we're relieved. We're headed to low Earth orbit, to the ISS and to the Soyuz attached to the ISS, a decision made by Roscosmos. What end, Bob?
This is still, it's not a confirmed decision, but unnamed sources in the Russian press are saying that Roscosmos is considering bringing the Soyuz capsule that was launched in late February to ISS back to Earth in June instead of September. This was the capsule that was launched to unmanned to replace the capsule that started to leak in December, basically provide the three astronauts that came in the leaking Soyuz a lifeboat. But because it was originally planned to stay up till September, it meant those guys would be, instead of a six-month mission coming back in March, they'd be on a year-long mission coming back in September. Well, the rumors suggest that the Russians want to bring it home in June for several reasons. One, if they bring it home in June, it'll only be up in space 3.5 months, which corresponds approximately to when the coolant leaks occurred in both the Progress freighter and the Soyuz capsule. Those spacecraft have been up in orbit about 3 months. That suggests that there are engineers in Russians, the inner workings of Russia, that are saying there might be a issue with the coolant system, and these problems might not have been caused by micrometeorites. They're not admitting this publicly, but this is implicated by this decision. The other reason they bring it home, which is definitely a good reason, which is these guys were not planning to do a year-long mission, and you got to be prepared for that. And so if they bring them home in 9 months, they reduce the strain on them significantly. And, you know, a full-year mission does require some preparation and serious health risks. So the Russians, I think, are reasonable to want to try to get these guys home a little sooner.
At approximately 7:42 a.m., thrusters on Progress 83 resupply vessel, currently docked with the ISS, fired for a little more than 6 minutes, raising the station's orbit to prevent... What, Bob? What was the emergency?
Yeah, no emergency, but a potential collision. This is mentioned as an aside in the NASA blog post, posted on the ISS. They basically did a maneuver. By the way, the Progress freighter did this as routine, and this is what the space tug that Biden administration is proposing would replace. But the Progress freighter fired to raise the orbit to make sure there would be no chance of a collision with another satellite. The odds of a collision were slow, but they were low. But they always try to take careful precautions to make sure there's no chance. I linked to the article that described this, which had a nice graph. The number of times there's been that they've had to maneuver ISS to avoid collision since 1999 are not many per year, from 0 to 5 per year, and there's no trend up or down, which does suggest that the screams about space junk, to a certain extent, may be overrated. If there's no trend up and down, that does suggest that there isn't more junk that's becoming a threat. Well, now that, you know, we have to be careful about this, but either way, it's out of the way. It's protected right now, and ISS won't continue for a while.
All right, launch packages for SpaceX and China. Let's take China first. What are they up to?
Yeah, and this relates to space junk, too, because it's a separate story, but it's China. China launched a 4C, a Long March 4C rocket to carry two Earth observation satellites in orbit. We really don't know what those satellites did. We do not know whether the expendable first stage landed in the habitable areas since it crashes. And a related story, and a Long March 2D upper stage rocket that was launched in June 22, it burned up over Texas this week. Breaking up. There's no indication that any material hit the ground, and this is not an unusual thing. But, you know, it just fits into, one, there's politics, and they're making China look bad in announcing this. And also, it does raise the issue that you should really, all rocket companies, national and private, should be trying to make sure their upper stages can be brought down in a controlled manner.
Bob, is it also possible that if you keep enough fuel, you can deorbit and guarantee burn up over the ocean? Can you do that?
Oh, yes, yes, exactly right. In fact, SpaceX tries to do this routinely with its upper stages, and there's no reason why China couldn't do the same. It has not been policy for decades because upper stages eventually come down, and one, there's a 70% chance they'll come down over the ocean, and two, they're usually not big enough for parts to hit the ground. And so no one really cared, and we have no historic examples of anything hitting anybody, so it was a reasonable position. But since more rockets are being launched, the risks are increasing just by statistically, so most companies now use some of the leftover fuel to bring the satellites down, and the Chinese should do the same. That's simple as that.
China runs a sloppy organization, Bob. It's always offended me that they drop boosters on population areas. So let's go to SpaceX. It runs a very neat operation.
They launched 40 OneWeb satellites. This completes their three-launch contract with OneWeb, who is a competitor with Starlink, SpaceX's company, but that doesn't matter. SpaceX is quite glad to make the money for these three launches that the Russians lost when they broke their contract with OneWeb after the invasion of the Ukraine. This flight also had a first stage that completed its 13th flight, which is not a record. They have another first stage that's completed 15. And at this moment in time, I'd just like to point out that SpaceX alone leads the entire world combined, including other American companies, in the number of launches in 23. SpaceX has 16. Everyone else in the world combined has 13. I think that's a pretty remarkable number, John.
We go to Space Force, assigning what looks to be a positive direction. Four small-sat rocket startups get launch pads. But you have an interpretation of this, Bob.
Yeah, it's all good news. Space Force has assigned launch pad space at Cape Canaveral to four different small sat rocket companies, none of whom have launched yet. Some are closer than others. So they have now facilities at the Cape where they can launch from. What's interesting about this, though, is that one of the launch pads that has been given to two of these companies is also the same launch pad facility that SpaceX uses to land its first stages at Cape Canaveral. Now, I do not know if the Space Force wants these pads to be used by both, since they're not used all the time. They sit empty most of the time. These companies are developing quick launch facilities. They ship it in, they launch, they take it out. So, you know, a pad is really all they really need. So it's possible they could share the facility, but we don't know this at the moment. It's very possible that Space Force is kicking SpaceX out of its landing spot at Cape Canaveral. We're going to have to wait and see how that plays out, John.
What is a tug servicing company? Why do we need it in orbit?
We got a bunch of these now, but a new one, Starfish Space, has raised an additional $14 million in investment capital in addition to the $7 million it had raised previously. And Starfish is one of those companies that wants to provide orbital robotic servicing to satellites in orbit. Now, there's one company that's already doing it, Northrop Grumman. There's several others that want to, including Astroscale. Starfish wants to offer satellite companies a special proprietary capture docking mechanism that its servicing robots could use to dock with a satellite and then either raise its orbit or deorbit it, one or the other, and possibly also provide it fuel and lengthen its usability. They haven't done anything yet. They're going to do their first test of rendezvous and docking capabilities later this year with a demonstration vehicle they call Otter Pup. And so we just have more. This is to, you know, once again, increases the capabilities for lower cost in Earth orbit, John.
Quickly, Bob, a post-Artemis debrief. What have they discovered?
We've discovered on the one Artemis mission that went around the moon, most of the issues have to do with Orion. The heat shield ablated much more and differently than expected. NASA says this isn't a big deal. if I was an astronaut going on Orion, I would be a little more concerned. The power system also did some strange things, unexpected commands. They did not understand why. They're trying to figure that out. None of this prevented the mission or caused a problem with the mission. Final problem. Everything finally worked out. But they have to solve these problems. And NASA, on its own rockets, tends to be very nonchalant.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. We're going exploring to the beginning. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.